Then returning to the Division of Wildlife, item number 15, the Hunt Safe Program Overview. Then we're on 17. Yes, the archery. Thank you. For the archery antelope and archery deer public survey results, Andrew Norton.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Tom Kirschman, Director of the Wildlife Division. So the next item on the agenda here, we will have Andrew Norton come up and do the presentation in respect to the information form that we sent out to deer and archery hunters. And I think you'll find it pretty interesting on how the results and the information gathered from that really has lined up with some of our previous conversations about archery hunting and mule deer and hunting on public lands and that. So Andrew will give those details on that. So we'll have Andrew do that, and then we'll give you a few more updates on some of the next steps again as we go through this process again, culminating with us bringing alternatives or options for discussion and consideration by you, the commission, at the December commission meeting. So without further ado, I'll have Andrew come up, and then I'll join afterwards when Andrew completes the presentation and talk about a few more things. So turn it over to Andrew.
Thank you. Good morning.
There we go. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. Chair Whitmire, Secretary Roebling. I'm Andrew Norton, senior big game biologist here for one more day till I start my new role next Tuesday. So as Tom mentioned, I will be talking about the deer and antelope hunter input opportunity that we provided here just a month ago, and this is in regards to some petitions you heard a few months ago, in addition to other stakeholder comments regarding deer and antelope hunters in South Dakota. So what we wanted to do was, this was the first step to kind of get our finger on the pulse of where the issues may lie, what different hunter groups may feel about archery hunters, both antelope as well as deer, and then even split deer down into whitetail deer and mule deer. So the first section was just to look at where issues may be, whether hunter groups feel that there's too many, just about right, or too few archery hunters in different areas of the state. And then we had a separate section that then looked at, well, if there are some issues, what options would hunters prefer, whether that be to reduce opportunity, maintain, keep things the same, or increase opportunity. And definitely a challenging issue. Last year, I was here presenting about the changes to the deer draw structure. By design, that increased opportunity for some people, but it also decreased opportunity for others. So whenever you do something like that, you're obviously going to have some groups, usually it's the groups where their opportunity is limited, that aren't happy. In addition, whenever you change something, there's some level of understanding and complexity that's added that creates some challenges as well. So it's definitely a challenging thing. We want to provide the most fair and equitable opportunity for all of our hunters in the state, as well as the non-residents. So trying to get some baseline information here, and I'll go through that. A little bit of background. I'm going to start with the antelope input opportunity. I'm doing this because it's simpler than deer, because there's only one species. Regulations are a little bit simpler than deer. And both essentially are finding the exact same results, but I'll try to go through it. Antelope in a little bit more depth and then breeze through the deer, because a lot of it will be redundant. So probably the source of the issue here is that we've seen a steady increase in antelope archery hunters over the last 10 years. You can see that with the black dashed line there. That's the last 10 years, the trend of the increase in overall antelope archery hunters. Before that, you can kind of see there was a steep increase from 2005 to about 2009, and then a decrease, and that kind of followed antelope populations. Deer did the same thing. But over the last 10 years, we've kind of stabilized populations, if not slightly increased them. We've seen that steady increase. We've seen it for both groups. The green line is resident antelope hunters, and the blue line is non-resident. So both groups combined have more than doubled in 10 years. That means about 900 more resident archery antelope hunters and about 600 more non-resident archery antelope hunters. So there's more non-residents, or excuse me, more residents that have been added, but the percent is different because there's a lower number of non-residents. So what that means, in 2012, 17% of archery hunters were non-residents, and that jumped to 29% here in 2021. Quick background on what archery hunters' opportunity are right now. Anybody can purchase an any antelope license, and that's unlimited for residents and non-residents. There's one unit in the Black Hills that requires limited access permit. So getting into the design of the survey, we wanted to keep it simple. We sent this to every single antelope hunter, both archery and firearm, resident and non-resident. We wanted to provide this as an input opportunity, again, to get our finger on the pulse of what everyone feels that has some time to respond. So we wanted to keep it really simple. It was an email survey, 7 questions, probably only took a few minutes. There was an opportunity to provide comments. We did receive a lot from both surveys combined. We had 4,000 comments that we went through. Again, the breakdown of how we asked these questions. The first one was a really simple question of the portion of time you spent hunting public versus private. And then we get into breaking it down of opinions of hunters. So the first one was archery hunters on public versus private land. And then the next section was the opinion of resident archery hunters versus non-resident archery hunters. And then finally, that last section, number 4, was looking at licenses available. So would you want to limit opportunity, maintain, or increase? And as you can imagine, different hunter groups are going to have different opinions. We wanted to separate these into 4 different groups. The first 2 are 2 resident categories. So we've got resident archery hunters, and then the other one is resident firearm-only hunters. Those would be hunters that applied for a firearm license but did not purchase an archery license in the last 3 years. And then we did the same for non-residents. So we've got these 4 categories. One thing that'll be a reoccurring theme from this presentation is that we provided this opportunity, and the response rates aren't maybe purely reflective of interest, but seeing this 11% overall response rate being fairly low, in addition to a lot of questions, hunters would opt out, which basically means they would say they have no preference or no opinion, suggests that this issue is isolated to a small amount of hunters and maybe isolated to specific areas, not necessarily something that's pervasive across the entire state. We did see greater response, 20% for archery hunters compared to firearm hunters, where they were around 6 to 8%. So as you can imagine, an archery input opportunity, you're going to get greater response from the archery hunters. So just some quick bullet points here on results from what the opinions were on the number of archery hunters. It was pretty clean cut for antelope here. Most groups felt that there was too many antelope hunters on public land. There was almost across the board said that they were just about right on private land or had no opinion. So it was mainly isolated to concerns of too many hunters on public land. And then where there was a lot of difference was in the opinion of non-resident antelope archery hunters. All respondents were fine with the number of resident antelope archery hunters, but when it came down to non-residents, residents said that there were too many non-residents, and non-residents said that they were about right. So now moving into this last section here of, we've kind of identified where there may be concerns of too many archery hunters, what options, if any, would be favorable? And this is where it was really beneficial going through a lot of these comments. Appreciate the staff for spending dozens of hours reading through those 4,000 comments. We tried to summarize them, but it really illustrated the complexity of this issue. You had people ranging all the way from begging and pleading to keep things the way they are, don't complicate them anymore, to close the season for multiple years, and then other people saying provide unlimited opportunity for all hunter groups. So it responses across the board and just illustrates the complexity of the issue. So what would hunters want to prefer? Again, these are broken down by the 4 groups. The red colors are your residents. The solid ones are going to be bow hunters, and then the dashed lines are going to be firearm hunters. So for example, on the left panel there, you can see the solid red is resident bow hunters. And then there's five choices within this question of what preferences would you want regarding the antelope archery licenses per hunter. Starting from the left is the restrictive regulations, where it would be add additional limited access units. And then the next one over is choose a unit among several regional units. The one where you see a ton of responses, over 50% for resident bow hunters, is to maintain, essentially leave things the way they are. And then to the right of that, the lowest response for resident archery hunters was to increase the number of licenses per hunter. And then I've kind of got the lightly shaded bar off to the right. That's the opt-out, where the hunter would have responded no preference. As you can see, the two bow hunter groups, very few of them opted out, whereas the firearm hunter groups had a higher proportion that opted out. But again, across the board here, you're seeing that a lot of these groups are opting to maintain regulations the way that they are, don't change anything. The only group that wanted to limit opportunity was resident firearm only hunters, where the majority of them selected that archery hunters would choose a unit among several regional units. So I wanted to break this down a little bit further and look at, let's subset the respondents by respondents that actually said there was too many bow hunters for one of the previous questions. So we removed all the folks that either opted out or said that they were just about right or too few. So these are only people that said they're too many. So I'll just scroll back and forth. And if you look at the dark red, the residents, there's very little change. The add additional limited access units, the choose units categories go up slightly, but it's the same exact story. If you look at the other three, the dashed red, the blue, and the dashed blue, if I go back and forth here, you can see those left categories go up quite a bit higher. And in fact, some of the main preferences switch. For example, non-resident firearm only hunters selected choose a unit. A lot more non-resident bow hunters selected choose a unit and add an additional unit. And that's interesting, because that would be limiting their own opportunity. So again, across the board, most people are saying maintain, but if you kind of drill it down a little bit, there might be a slightly greater preference for choose a unit. So quick summary for antelope here. There was low response rates and a high number of respondents had no opinion or no preference. Again, suggests that this might be somewhat of an isolated issue limited to a minority of the hunters. Again, 10% response rate overall, 20% from bow hunters. Most of the antelope hunters, as you can imagine, where our antelope distribution is, were public land hunters, and that relates to their opinion of too many archery hunters on public. Again, residents felt there were too many non-residents, and the non-residents thought that numbers were about right. Non-residents even said that resident numbers were about right. And then finally, the archery hunters, as you would imagine, would not want to limit their own opportunity, but firearm hunters seem to select that choose one regional unit. So jumping into the deer archery results here, I'll try to go through this a little bit more quickly because, as I said in the beginning, a lot of the results are similar. Increases not as drastic for archery deer, only 30% in the last 10 years, but the same exact story, about a 5,000 increase in residents, about a 2,700 increase in non-residents. But again, because non-residents make up a lower percent or lower number of hunters, their percent increase was more than what the residents was. So we went from 11% non-residents in 2012 to 16%. A little bit more complicated regulations for archery deer hunters. They can choose to either purchase one any deer statewide license, or they can purchase an East River and or a West River. So potentially an archery deer hunter could get two any deer licenses, one for West River, one for East River. There are also four additional limited access units. They're all public land where a hunter must draw a limited access permit to hunt those properties. Results were almost the exact same as far as response rates, where you got around 20% for the bow hunters, actually below 5% for the firearm hunters. The survey was a little bit more complex because there were two species. We added some questions specific to mule deer and whitetail deer, and then we split up the questions to how they'd want to limit opportunity to change that East River, West River statewide, or choose a unit. And then the other question was to see if they had any interest in changing the number of limited access units. So what we found for results with the archery deer hunters, some support for too many archery deer hunters on public land, but not nearly as much as the antelope survey. Probably the reason for this is we found that more deer hunters were hunting private land. So you can imagine hunters that are on private land either have no opinion or maybe don't think there's too many deer hunters on public. I imagine if I subset by the public land only hunters, they may have stronger opinions about too many deer hunters on public land. And non-resident was the same exact thing, where strong support for too many non-residents from the residents, and the non-residents said they were about right. So getting back to this figure, again, deer being a little bit more complicated, there's a few more options. On the left side, there's three categories to limit opportunity. One of the options was to remove East River, West River license types and have a statewide only. The next one over was remove statewide and have East River, West River only. And then the third one was choose two units among several regional units. And then the category you can see where especially the resident bow hunters chose most was to maintain. A few chose to increase opportunity, and the very low proportion with no preference with the resident bow hunters. I've put the yellow stars for the firearm only hunters there. You can see with the red dashed and blue dashed, covering several categories, because although maintain was still the most preferred choice, if you sum up the three categories that would limit opportunity, they would equate to more than that maintain. But again, maintain being the overwhelming preference here for limiting the number of licenses per hunter. If I drill that down again to subset by respondents that only choose too many, you can see a little bit more support, similar to antelope archery, of choose two units among several regional units. But again, our resident and non-resident archery hunters, overwhelming support for maintain. So quick summary here, again, same story, low response rates. Many respondents had no opinions. A little bit more private land hunting, especially from our residents, whereas the non-residents were mixed public and private. Different opinions from residents and non-residents, maybe a slightly supportive of too many deer on public land, a little bit more support for mule deer over whitetail deer, but interestingly, there wasn't a huge difference between those two. Residents felt too many non-residents. Finally, most groups wanted to maintain regulations. But if they were forced to choose, they might select limited to two units, which is interesting because if the issue is isolated to public land, those limited access units are aimed at exactly the issue of limiting the number of hunters on public land. So I'm just going to finish here by revisiting the trends in the number of bow hunters the last 15 or 20 years. And it's always dangerous to project these out 10 years, but that's what I've done here. If the trend for the last 10 years persists into 2030, you can see we're going to have quite an increase. And because we added that question of where do you hunt most, I could then subset and look at what number of bow hunters would likely be hunting public land, at least at some point, if they selected any public land hunting. So that would result in maybe the last couple of years, about 2,500 public land antelope hunters and about 25,000 public land deer hunters. So if that's kind of the tipping point, these yellow lines here, where we're seeing some issues of too many hunters, and again, this is statewide, but if it's public land, it's 2,500 and antelope hunters and 25,000 deer hunters, then if we would want to do something, let's say some of the comments we have are eliminate non-residents, similar to what we have for elk and mountain lions. Well, in 10 years, if this trend persists, we'd have more residents than we have right now combined. And likewise, even for deer growing at a slower rate, we'd be right back to where we are now. So just kind of some things to consider with how opportunity would be limited. And again, I can't stress enough of the comments being all across the board. And again, going from begging us to leave things the way they are to close the season for multiple years to all sorts of ideas. And fortunately, we're going to meet with stakeholders here and get some more ideas and have a lot more discussion about this topic. So with that, I can take any questions or turn it back over to Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. That was quite informative, especially on the deer, that the resident, non-resident, and those bars on the deer component were quite similar. I mean, I was expecting more, but any questions for Andrew? Commissioner Locken.
I'm sorry to ask this question. Could you back up the screen on any deer? Those units you're talking about on that, would that be just East River? Would that include the Black Hills on the archery, any deer?
Right. Or
no, forward. Right there. Is that including, those are Black Hills licenses in there
too? Yeah, so this would be every single, the green line is every single resident bow hunter. And the blue line is every single non-resident bow hunter. And then I just took the percent of those responses that said they hunted any public land. So we had options of mostly public, some public, half and half, mostly private, some public. So any of those responses, that percent was just applied to the total number of bow hunters.
I thought maybe the Black Hills might tip the balance a little bit because it's so much public land.
Yeah, and that's an important point. That's what the limited access units in like Custer National Forest are set up to do, these areas where we have big chunks of a lot of public land and a lot of hunters tend to go to those areas.
Thank you.
Further questions for Andrew? It's, just kind of on the archers, I don't know how pertinent it is on that, but do you know on the harvest? We know the number of hunters has gone up. Is harvest pretty much track with the with that, or are we getting better harvest as a percentage? You know, success rate, I guess, is what I'm probably asking about compared to 2005 today. Those today, they're able to, you know, shoot much better, straighter, the arrows, with carbon and everything, they're just getting a lot more, a better equipment, I guess, for our archers out there. And so I'm just a little curious too on how harvest tracks with 2005 to today.
Yeah, so through the chair, I had on those figures, I didn't point it out, they're red diamonds that were the harvest, the total archery harvest, and that tracks very, very closely with the total number of archery hunters. And that's at least from 2005 to 2012, that closely followed the population. That's where we had the steep increases. You can remember maybe back in 2008, 9, 10, we had a lot of deer and pronghorn, and then we had some winters and some drought conditions increased the population. So you can clearly see the harvest going up and coming down and following exactly the number of archery hunters. And then I would say recently with this increase, we haven't looked at success as much, but yeah, as you can imagine, success may increase, but it really doesn't seem to be increasing as much as you would think, given the new equipment and trail cameras and all of that.
Yeah, technology, right? Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Commissioner Spring.
Was there any questions on there, like how many, I heard you say, but I didn't quite understand, like what they were hunting, mule deer, whitetail, was there a question on there of that effect or not?
Through the chair? No, there wasn't. The only questions about mule deer versus whitetail were, what do you feel about the number of mule deer hunters on public land? What do you feel about mule deer hunters on private land? I did forget to mention that we put together a report. It's about 30 pages that will be available, as well as all of the comments will be in there. That's a couple hundred pages, I think. And that'll have all the questions listed. But yeah, we did not ask what they were going after.
It would be nice to know, you know, what percentage of the archery non-resident that hunt the Black Hills compared to the rest of the state. It'd be nice information that I'd like to see, because it seemed like whenever I hunted in the Black Hills with elk and whatever and helped other people, it was just a big amount of non-residents in the Black Hills hunting at that same time, archery hunting deer. It'd be nice to know some of them statistics. Thank you.
Through the chair. Just one thing to add, we do have, although the archery licenses are statewide or East River, West River, we do have harvest measured at the unit level. So we would have that. That's just obviously success. There could be more hunters that are unsuccessful. But in our harvest summaries, we definitely have the harvest by unit. So we would have archery harvest by residents, or I think it's just total archery harvest in the Black Hills. I don't think we have that broken up by residents and non-residents, but we could get that.
A lot of the non-residents that come to South Dakota, in my opinion, but I don't know for sure, but so many of them come from the east where there is no mule deer, where I think there's probably a fair amount come here just to hunt mule deer because they're available here. We're kind of the first Western state that has them. So that'd be something I'd kind of like to know too.
Yeah, through the chair. That'd be just like Nick's presentation yesterday would be something great to visualize and have where those hunters come from. But you're definitely right. A lot of them are tons from Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe some from Michigan. We get a lot from Pennsylvania just because there's a lot of people out there.
Secretary Rowland.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, great presentation, Andrew. One quick question in regards to hunter densities on public land. Do we have any idea, you know, looking at the 2,500 antelope hunters and the 25,000 deer hunters that we think are hunting public land, have we broken that down into densities per se? And how's that compared to, let's say, a private land hunting density? What is the difference there? Is it three times as many hunters hunting public land versus private land? I know that's a tough question to answer, but any indication as to how we quantify that and get an idea of what that might be?
Through the chair. Maybe I could ask Andy. He might have a better idea, but to get the hunter densities, we don't have a lot of information on hunting public or private. Historically, I think we had one survey maybe 10 years ago where we asked that. This fortunately was included here, so we could take the total number of hunters and then look at harvest reported spatially and then multiply that by the public land hunters and get an idea. But definitely, I would expect we're going to have a lot higher density of archery hunters on public.
Yeah, I know. Again, Andrew said it all. This data that you have, that survey there is actually our recent data.
Sorry, Andy Lindblom here, senior big game biologist. Yeah, the data from this survey here is actually the most recent data we have on hunters hunting private versus public. So I think that'd be a good exercise to do. The most recent stuff before that was back in the late 90s. I think, Kevin, you remember looking at some of that. So should be able to update that a little bit from this survey, but obviously, we'll have to make some assumptions about harvest and what have you, but yeah, I think that's a good exercise to do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you. Thanks, Andrew. All right. Director Kirschman.
Mr. Chairman, a few other comments in respect to this, and again, thank you, Andrew, and all the staff that worked on putting this together. Again, I want to reiterate the whole purpose why we did this. And that's another form of public input, right? We had a lot of the conversations about this topic when the petitions came forward several months back from South Dakota bull hunters, which really, quite honestly, precipitated us doing this as well. This was a good opportunity, we believed, to get actual raw thoughts from our hunters out there and to see, you know, some of the items that have been brought forward. Is this something that's tracking across all of our deer hunters out there, or is it more confined to some of our hunters out there? And so, again, while the response rate was somewhat low for some of those folks, to be able to send out to well over, 80,000 plus hunters over the last 3 years, whether they actually had a license or applied for a license, we were looking at deer hunters in general, to get the number of response we got was still very valuable information. Now, we can use this as we move forward in building some of these alternatives and options because we have a better understanding what multiple deer hunters are and antelope hunters are thinking and believing what's happening out there. And again, some of this aligns, quite honestly, pretty close to some of our previous discussions about mule deer and public lands and some of those things. So this was just very valuable information to us to help build on this conversation and work on these alternatives and options as we move forward over the next several months. So our next step, as I mentioned a few moments ago, is staff have worked real diligently in putting together a stakeholder group. And it'll be comprised of approximately 20-ish, right around there, of folks. We're going to have sportsmen, i.e. deer hunters, antelope hunters from in South Dakota. We've got some entities in there that are sportsmen. We've got some landowner folks that are in there. We're going to try to have a diversity or a cross-section of individuals or organizations on the stakeholder groups that we can hear and continue to discuss some of these ideas, options, and alternatives. Again, another form of input as we generate these options for your consideration in December. The one piece that I want to quickly ask you as a commission body, right now we would enjoy and we'd like to have one or two commissioners as part of this stakeholder group for a couple of reasons. Number one, we know there's a high interest in this conversation from you as a commission body, obviously from our conversations through those petitions, conversations over the last couple of years, and with you providing us the direction to bring options in December. So that being said, we do not want to be the ones that dictate who should or should not be on that stakeholder group. We turn to you and ask the commission body, and I know we have a few folks missing today, but let you decide and offer up to us who you'd like to have on the stakeholder group from the commissioners themselves. Again, we'd love to have one or two, whatever you think is appropriate, but to be part of that conversation would be very healthy. And then number two, just to hear these other stakeholder members and what they're thinking, what ideas they're sharing and some of their opinions. So I don't know that I need an answer today, but very, very soon, because we're going to start making calls to the other folks and start this process of getting the stakeholder group together once or twice before that December meeting to talk about some of these alternative options. So I would turn to you today to see if anybody has interest and if the rest of you are comfortable with that overall approach and like to have that one or two commissioners that would be part of that stakeholder group. And then lastly, we will send you a hard copy, an electronic copy of Andrew's presentation today, so you have it in hand in case somebody calls you and asks you a question. Please feel free to send those to us as well, whether it's myself, Andrew, Chad Switzer, John Canta, Andy Lindblom, whoever it is, send them our way. We can answer questions, go over further details with it, but we'll make sure that you have that in your hand as well so you have it and you can look at it again. And in particular, if any one or two of you end up being part of the stakeholder group, you have that as a reference point as well. And I'm sure we'll go over it with the stakeholder group also. So that was just a couple of things I wanted to follow up on. And then if you have any quick thoughts on commission members that would like to be part of it, strong feeling, please let us know today because we're going to start calling folks and get them together and start sharing information, start those conversations. Last thing I'd share with you, the stakeholder group too, is our plan is we're going to have a couple of non-resident hunters on there as well. I mean, this is a conversation about resident archery hunting and non-resident archery hunting as well. Certainly has a bigger impact, and we've heard it most from our resident hunters, but we will have a couple of non-resident hunters on there as well to share their perspective, help answer questions, and just be part of the conversation, right? The stakeholder group is not the body that decides what the future looks like, but they have that opportunity to weigh in and help us build that direction of the future. And so ultimately it'll come back to you as the commission. So Mr. Chairman, I'll quit rambling on here, but turn it back to you. If there's any other questions you have, and again, if anybody, if you have a recommendation of that one or two commissioners, please let us know today, if at all possible, if not real shortly here.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. I know there's a real effort to whatever it is we're looking at doing to modify the current situation. That effort would be to be implementing those changes by the 2023 or for the 2023 season. So I know that time is not necessarily on our side, but it's good. I'm glad that we're taking the time we are to vet different ideas that are out there, different approaches, and we certainly reach out to the parties involved. I know we've got two commissioners out today, but so we'll reach out to them as well. But I guess do you have any other thoughts at this time for Tom? But Commissioner Locken.
I just had a quick question, and maybe it's not pertinent, but do we ever get any survey results back and say, gosh, I bought a license, but my life just turned upside down and I didn't make it out there this year. Do we ever see any of those replies on a survey?
To the chairman, Commissioner Locken, those certainly do come in as general comments quite often, whether we're talking East River deer season, archery deer season, elk season, whatever it might be. There's always individuals that have circumstances arise or come up, and their comment in there will say, man, I had good intentions to go hunting, but X, Y, and Z came up and I just didn't have the opportunity to go. So we do see that in particular in the comment section. And as we talked a little bit yesterday, Director Simpson talked about with the Go Outdoor system and, you know, people turning licenses in and we'll reinstate preference points and those things. And we have individuals every year that call and have an illness or have some major family issue before the season starts to say, I'm not going to be able to go hunting, right? So we have that information and we get that information on an annual basis.
Thank you. Other comments for Tom or questions? All right. Yeah, we'll discuss that and then reach out to those other commissioners and try to get a couple name or two for that. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Tom.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner.